This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Ria Lewis. Time for Tech Talk, and we've got the people from Digital News Asia here with us. Karanjit Singh and Anusha Kandasivam. Chong Jin Seong is also supposed to be here with us. He'll probably join us in a moment. It seems like he's picked up some bad habits from Karanjit Singh. But anyway, fortunately, we have Anusha, and we're going to start with Anusha. And you have a report that takes a look at MDEC's performance for 2016. So tell us about this report, and how did MDEC do last year?
Fresh off the press conference a moment.
Yeah, I just rushed here from the press conference.
Thank you.
The things we do for BFM.
Well, according to MDEC, they did pretty well. We've been growing quite steadily, despite the kind of the economic
situation.
they identified focus areas that they wanted to grow, which is e-commerce, Internet of Things, cloud and data centers, big data analytics, and security. So according to them, these focus areas contributed 3.7 billion ringgit to total export sales last year, which is 38% growth from 2015, which is pretty significant. Yasmin, the CEO.
Dato' Yasmin Mahmood.
Sorry, Dato'
Yasmin. Yeah, here you go. Maybe you're on a first name basis with her.
Okay. Yeah, you know we are indeed.
All journalists are, yeah.
So she was saying that e-commerce showed the highest amount of investments in growth last year, which is not surprising. And the second highest one was big data analytics. Altogether, there's been about 10 times growth from 2014. So, which is, I think, if I'm not mistaken, more than expected.
Right. So when you say that it's over 3 billion and all that, and so these are companies under the stable of MDEC, companies that are being nourished and growing.
Actually, no, not all are nourished. Okay. A number of MNCs and established tech companies from around the region, around the world, have MSC, you know, status subsidiaries or so. And as you know, that just shields you from having to pay taxes because you get that 5 right. plus 5. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many actually get the plus 5 then, but for sure you get 5 years. And that for a long time has been an obvious grouse among entrepreneurs that, you know, when you're a startup, you know, and you get MSC status or you're a new company, you're not going to be making profit the first 2 years. Yeah. So some have been arguing that maybe you offer the 5 plus in year 4 onwards or whatever. But that's a small point. The basic, to answer your question, a lot of these are large companies or so, yes.
MSC status companies. Correct. So under that
it could be local, it could be, you know, NTT, you know, is one of the largest, and they were one of the first MSC status companies.
Yeah, all right.
It's a combination.
Okay, so, is that all you have for MDEC?
Well, maybe one more thing to mention is the amount of SMEs adopting e-commerce has been growing significantly. So the target that the government has set is 50% by 2020. 50% of our SMEs should be adopting e-commerce.
Right.
And we're on track because last year it was 20%, and Dr. Yasmin said this year it's going to be 32%, which is a very big growth. So, easily achievable 50% by 2020.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that all SMEs should be moving towards.
And you should be moving towards very fast, because I think Singapore has a program, and I don't know if I got the name right. Maybe it's called Future Singapore. And they've got a master plan. I think there's the word future is there. Whether future workforce Singapore, whatever. And one of the key tenets of this is that SMEs all need to be online and digital. Not so much online, but digital ready right now. And this being Singapore, right? So they managed to get Singtel and DBS as the anchor players in coming up with a free set of education, you know, tools, products for all SMEs to get educated in what they need to do to be online, to be digital right away. So this 50% sounds good, 2020. Mm-hmm. Knowing that how aggressive Singapore is being, I just wonder whether it's enough, it's an ambitious enough target. It's very realistic for sure.
Mm.
But do you want to have just a stretch target and push them to do much more?
In Singapore, it's a lot more easier to manage.
Absolutely,
and to control, right? In Singapore, it's that island. So if we say, yes, 50% is great, but we've got, you know, the Malaysia
to look
into, right? So I guess
and probably I think the 80-20 rule applies. Probably the 50% of SMEs which are going to seek becoming more digital are probably contribute, I'm sure, 80% of the total revenue of our SME cluster also. So in terms of impact, yeah, maybe it's there.
Right. Okay. So I want to move on to Zalora.
Yes.
Right. And Zalora's invested.
Man, her eyes light up, man. Oh, how much shopping is girl doing there?
Regular customer has invested 4.2 US.
Yeah, 4.2
million US on regional e-fulfillment hub right here in Malaysia. So and so this hub is here in Malaysia. And Jeff has written notes for me. He said this hub is here in Malaysia and it's huge.
Well, yeah. Shamila's there. Let's find out now. Sorry, Shamila.
Anusha.
I tell you, we find him every time he mixes our names up. We're
hey,
getting
don't say that on
so air. Tell me, Sham.
Yeah, so it's huge. It's almost, what is it now?
How many football fields?
Nine football fields? Oh. Something
wait,
like
that.
They use the wrong analogy.
Huh? It's inshallah.
They should say how many, you know, L'Occitane stores. Then she would just straight away.
Please.
The size of 200 L'Occitane. Okay.
Basically, it handles about 4 million items. They're in there. It handles that every day. Yeah.
SKUs, lah. So I just want to impress the readers out there. Sure. SKU.
Yeah. And, oh, by the way, 4.2 million US dollars is 20 million ringgit, which is a lot of money.
It is.
Yeah.
It and goes higher every day.
Yeah.
So, now, Frida, let me ask you a question. What's the difference between an e-fulfillment hub and a regional distribution center?
Oh. About time someone put Frida on the spot.
Okay, so
brilliant question. Remind me.
Regional distribution is where, you know, I guess where all the products are distributed from, right? And that becomes your, you know, when you think of that central place. E-fulfillment, so, wow.
So that's why, see, I asked them that question. I asked Rostin Javadi, who is the managing director of Zalora Malaysia. So he said, if you think about a distribution center, is basically they store items there and then they ship it out.
Correct.
But e-fulfillment hub is so much more. So what they do is that's where the orders come in. That's where they process the orders and everything is on the cloud.
Okay.
Everything is centralized. They have an amazing high-tech system. Mm-hmm. So items are picked, packaged, sorted, sent out to customers all from that hub.
Where is Zalora? I mean, in Asia Pacific, where are they? They're in.
So Malaysia, Singapore, Brunei, Taiwan, Hong Kong. Where else?
Philippines,
Indonesia. 6 countries, at least. If
yeah.
Not more.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that's okay. That's I think of the volume from Philippines and
so
Indonesia.
So this hub actually caters to all these places. Yeah. The reason they chose Malaysia, of course, cost is lower.
Okay.
Yeah. And they customs has made them an authorized economic operator, which basically just means that they have a green lane at customs in the border. So all the items going in and out just go in and out smoothly. They don't have to wait. The customs doesn't open the packages. That's why people are able to get their
things faster.
Things
okay,
hours.
And that's very progressive for customs to do that.
Authorized
right?
What again? Never heard that term before.
Authorized economic operator.
Wow, interesting.
Yep. So you see the Zalora box and it goes into it. So you can put all kinds of things into the Zalora box.
Yeah. Oh, very interesting. And by the way, but I think this logistics hub is, or fulfillment hub is actually run by a supply chain company out of Singapore, right? And the CEO himself was down. Yeah, what's it, YNH or something?
YCH. It's not run by YCH. YCH helped them build the infrastructure. So
they've got expertise.
Yeah, they've got all the expertise. Okay. They helped them design the insides and put in the infrastructure, advise them on people to use and you know, that things, and also made an investment of money investment into it.
Really?
Yes,
they put in money also?
They put in money.
Wow, that's interesting.
I don't have the figure right now, but it's in the article. Go and read it.
Okay, there you go. Don't know the figure?
Yeah.
Go read the article.
Yeah.
Okay, all your answers will be there.
Okay, so that's right. And then,
but
you know,
continue listening to radio as well.
Yeah, like radio. Once in a while. But, you know, they had the minister there, which is very impressive. Huh?
Yes.
The amount of investment isn't very big, but they managed to get Mustafa Muhammad there, Topa.
No, it's quite huge, you know. It is.
4 million. Oh, in ringgit,
yeah.
20 million.
Yeah.
Okay.
And choosing Malaysia as the hub,
exactly,
you know.
Yeah.
That's almost a no-brainer. You look at the cost advantage.
Yeah. And Malaysia is one of their biggest customer bases. The Klang Valley is. And then Singapore and Brunei is becoming very big.
Brunei,
market.
What? The 98,000 people in Brunei shopping that much?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
300,000.
300,000 now.
When I left 30 years ago, it was 240.
Oh, really? Yeah. 30 years ago.
I don't know if it's 30. I think it's more than 300,000.
Oh,
I'm not
wow.
kidding.
Oh, that's big population. Okay.
Okay, so that's with Zalora. And you're also releasing a report on a big picture overview of the online food delivery services in Malaysia. So
she spent a lot of time on that. It's coming. She already has written the story. We're going to run it tomorrow because we're savoring it ourselves.
We interviewed Damakan on Monday.
Yes,
you did. Yeah. Tell us.
Well, I did quote Damakan in there. I got some insight from them and from Foodpanda, and I also spoke to some civilians who
civilians
as in military personnel.
Yeah, so I would have
an interesting choice of words
when I started doing my research that the market is kind of saturated, but it's not. Surprisingly, it hasn't changed that much, and there's still a lot of space for growth. It's a $1 trillion industry.
Really?
You mean in Malaysia?
Who came up with those figures?
Who came up with the numbers? Yeah. Correct.
So I spoke to Aspa Leka, the managing director of Foodpanda Singapore. She said that there is a lot of competition, but competition is healthy, which is because there are a lot of new players entering the market all the time, and young players, 1 or 2 years old, are still they're growing, they're trying to scale up, move further, but for established people like Foodpanda, she said it's a good thing because it keeps them on their toes, basically. Yeah. Makes them play in the high leagues.
So I mean, the insight I had from Monday's interview was that, you know, like with what they feel, Damakan feel like, because they own the whole value chain from the production of the food and all that. And with, I guess, food delivery, you know, you're working with restaurants and, you know, it's really dependent on how efficient the restaurants are, right? And whether then the food arrives hot or not. But with this case, they're able to control the whole value chain, which was very interesting, right? Yeah. And they've come a long way because I didn't use them before because price was a little bit too much for me. Not an everyday thing, right? At 20 ringgit, I'm not in that league. Not every day. But it's just interesting to see how they've grown as well. And now that there's a systematic way where the food arrives within half an hour of you ordering it. Wow, you know? Okay.
Yeah.
Because I get hungry by 10:30.
Yeah. So
A.M. or P.M.?
A.M. I get hangry if the food doesn't arrive on time.
Hangry. Oh, that's
hangry.
A new word.
Hungry plus angry.
Angry. Yeah. Sort of like that.
Yeah. So, like you said, there's all these kind of people who are doing different things and trying to find ways to disrupt and, you know, finding new things to do because there are a lot of players. But
which is great for your average Malaysian because we love our food. Exactly. And we want it now.
And it's great for customer experience and service, like diversity of experience.
Yeah.
And it also is good for driving costs down, though that is going very slowly.
Yeah, because some of them, if they use ingredients, right? I mean, you know, they have to import the stuff, and
you cannot drive costs down. So you spoke to some restaurant owners. What did they say?
So I spoke to this restaurant owner in Klang, who owns this very popular Indian restaurant, and he said that traditionally the business has not been delivery service, but because customers are requesting it, he's done it, and he did. Was approached by Foodpanda because he's got really good reviews on TripAdvisor and things like that, but didn't want to go with Foodpanda because of they require him to give a significant discount to customers.
And on top of that, they do charge for delivery.
Yeah, exactly.
How to give significant discount? Yeah, okay.
So he decided to just do delivery himself, and he said that his delivery prices are higher than dine-in prices because. Yeah, because he charges for packaging and, you know, the delivery costs as well. But customers still are willing to pay. Because the thing is, if you have a unique product, a product that everybody wants, people will pay the money for it.
Yeah. What was also interesting from that interview was we talked about food wastage, right?
Oh, okay.
And that Damakan have actually worked out a mechanism where they've minimized it to 5%. Most restaurants would have food wastage of 10 to 15%. So, and that's very typical of most restaurants.
Okay.
But now they're sort of like trying to work out like certain days. They say Monday and Friday, people seem to order less. And what kind of thing that you need. And Malaysians love their chicken. chicken.
Mm. Chicken.
So you got to make sure that there's a chicken meal every day. So that, so they've sort of worked out something from all that analytics. Mm-hmm, so that's where technology comes into play, right? And help you in minimizing costs, right? All right, we'll continue our conversation with the team from Digital News Asia, Karamjit Singh, Anusha Kandasivam, and the missing Chong Jin Seong. But we have a special guest here with us, and that will be revealed in just a moment. Stay tuned to Tech Talk, BFM 89.9.
Bulletins for Managers, BFM 89.9.
You're listening to Tech Talk. Good afternoon. This is Frida Liu. If you just join us, we have the people from Digital News Asia. We have Anusha Kandasivam, not Sham, Karamjit Singh, and Chong Jin Seong, who's on the way. That's what last conversation is on the way, but he's still missing. Anyway, Karam, you have a guest here, and he's not a stranger to us, okay? Anand Krishnan from Endeavor is with you, and this is because Endeavor's platform now welcomes 18 new entrepreneurs, right? So, unbeknownst to you, we've got a long BFM and Never, but yeah, no, tell us more.
Frida kind of thinks that I didn't know, so I was caught with my underwear down because I invited Anand on the show. But obviously I knew because I know most things, I think, yes. Anyway, getting back to the more important thing. So because Anand was nice enough to say, hey, Karam, we've got this international selection panel being held for the first time in Southeast Asia, and it's going to be in Kuala Lumpur. Come and check it out. So
the cocktails are great.
No. Yes, I missed that. I was there having a roti canai with him, at Teh Tarai, where we had our first conversation. And so he managed to convince me that, hey, this is something interesting I should go for. Mm. And so I went on it's over 2 days, right? Mm. So I attended the first day where these high potential entrepreneurs from around the world were selected by their individual Endeavor country units, as Anand is running one in Malaysia. And they were sent to Malaysia to pitch and to hopefully get selected by the international selection panel. And just listening, I heard I was in a room with an entrepreneur from Peru. He's like in his 50s. And he's talking about the business that he has grown, offering a training to banks, financial institutions for their staff and how to sell their products. And fascinating guy. And the entrepreneur was getting amazing insight from the panel member. I can mention the panel member, right?
It's no big deal.
And in this case, the panel member was Afzal, who also happens to be the chairman of, I don't know why you give him such a grand title, just the head honcho of the Endeavor Malaysia board.
And Afzal from Time.net.
Yeah, Afzal from Time.com. Yeah. And Afzal was giving the entrepreneurs some very interesting insight, and including one of them, he said, when I look at your numbers, and I thought this was amazing, I don't know if the entrepreneur picked it up, because when you're an entrepreneur and you're building your business, you're so into your business, you don't take the 2 feet two steps back and look at big picture what's going on, right? Afzal said, hey, you've got your R&D costs embedded as part of your operational, expenses, and he said you shouldn't do that. You should separate that out because your R&D is actually a differentiator for the product. And I went, boom, oh my goodness, he's right. And I don't know if the entrepreneur realized that, but I'm sure in all the other panel sessions, these entrepreneurs who are trying to become Endeavor entrepreneurs are gaining that kind of incredible insight from the selection panel.
I think just maybe, for the benefit of some people who don't know what Endeavor is, and these are these mentors that they have access to. Mm-hmm. And it's not monetary. It's just mentorship,
exactly,
right? And that's quite unique, right? Maybe you can,
It's unique and definitely, Anand, you talk, and if you read our article,
you
30 seconds.
When you let me.
When I let you, No, if you read the article on DNA, there's this very good video that Endeavor Malaysia has made. Mm-hmm. That 4-minute video, you just watch it and it's fantastically done. It cuts to the heart of what Endeavor is, and credit to you guys for creating that video,
No, thank you for having me.
Mic is yours.
Minor correction, Karam. Okay. So this is not the first time in Southeast Asia.
Okay.
It's the first time in Malaysia. But we have done it in Indonesia before.
Oh, exactly. Well done, Indonesia. Yeah. Okay.
So we've been in Malaysia for about just under 3.5 years now. We are an entrepreneur support organization. We work with what we call scale-ups. Mm-hmm. So not startups, not people who are just getting off the ground, but people who have been around for a while already. We help them find access to very high-quality mentors, access to capital, access to talent. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so essentially that's what we do, and we hosted our first ever international selection panel here last month.
Right, at one of the
new hotels in town. And also at Sasana Kijang. So, credit to Bank Negara or the Asian...
And the Asia School of Business.
Asia School of Business, right. For sponsoring them. Amazing facilities there.
They had their gathering at Dato' Sri Singai's place, Feruni,
one of our 13 companies in Malaysia.
Or 18 entrepreneurs. Actually, these guys focus on the entrepreneur, right? Not the company.
The 18 entrepreneurs are those that came from around the world.
No.
So we have 18 Endeavor entrepreneurs in Malaysia already.
Now. Yeah. Okay.
From 13 companies.
They're from 13 companies. But it's amazing, right? So I was wondering about the impact this program or, this constellation of high-performing individuals who are in KL. Mm. What was the impact on the ecosystem? I say you don't want them to just hang out among themselves, right? And that was one of the key things that I asked Anand, and you can maybe share
that.
Sure.
So I think what you witnessed over that, 3-day period is actually the culmination of a lot of work that goes into the selection, right? So, like, for example, in the Malaysian context, we evaluated the companies that we sent for the ISP here for between 6 months to 3 years.
Right? And how many companies were represented from Malaysia?
So we had three companies from Malaysia.
And two?
Two got through.
Two, okay.
Yeah, and we had 16 companies overall.
Overall, so 16 companies from around the world.
Around the world.
And from the 16, how many were selected?
10 companies were
10
selected.
Companies, right? Yeah. So, and what was interesting, like for the Malaysian one, we had
Fashion Valley. Yeah, who is a comeback candidate.
Right.
They went to their first ISP.
And didn't qualify the first
time. They didn't get through in 2015.
And so it was very interesting. Like, they really want to be there, right? And who was the other one?
iHandal, which is an engineering solutions provider. Mm. So Aaron Patel, boy genius, as I call him. Mm. And Aaron got through as well, these two.
And then the third one was?
The third one was Superhands, who is a comeback candidate. So they will be coming back to an ISP at some point this year.
So that's interesting. When you talk comeback candidate, actually when I was, so the second day I was listening to one of the group of panelists deliberating about which of the entrepreneurs should be a Endeavor entrepreneur and which they should check, a young man, young lady, you're not suitable for Endeavor.
For now?
No. They actually even tell you that you're not suitable actually as an Endeavor candidate. So go build a business. And there's a third category where you have potential and this is some friendly advice, get this done and then you can come back as a comeback candidate.
Yeah.
So they don't also want to waste entrepreneurs' time if you come back 3-4 times. Because entrepreneurs are persistent, right? Each year they get closer. But they'll actually, and I think it takes a lot of it takes some guts, but also you don't waste people's time, right? Some entrepreneurs, they will tell you're actually not suitable. So good luck, but just don't try this again. It's not being arrogant or whatever, just not wanting to waste anyone's time or giving false hope, right?
I think, to be honest with you, most of the people that get turned away at these international selection panels are people that are comeback candidates. Because for them to be turned away completely, it means that typically the local office probably hasn't done their due diligence right or whatever. Because again, we spend anything from 6 months to years evaluating these entrepreneurs before they get to that stage.
Bit action lah, 6 months to 3 years. the high performing company
rigorous.
May not be around also then.
Okay. And of course, and the reason they want to be an Endeavor entrepreneur, like you say, mentorship, access to capital, and
access to talent as well.
Access to talent.
So our main value proposition, I think, is access to mentors. Like Karam said, very senior people who are going to sit down with you, look at, not just your challenges with the business, but your challenges as an entrepreneur as well. Mm. And who are coming from a place that is completely unbiased. They have no vested interest in your business. Their motivation really is to see the entrepreneur itself succeed.
I guess people want to find out, why do these? Because I don't think these mentors are paid.
They donate their time completely pro bono.
Yeah, and it's time from them. And we're talking very high caliber people here. And why would they want to do that? And I think people are like, I don't get it. Why?
So I think, generally speaking, all of them want to pay their success forward, right? These are people who have already been, been blessed with very successful careers, ventures.
And maybe they find new businesses to invest in from this.
So that's interesting. A lot of people think that, right? If they want to invest in an entrepreneur that they meet via Endeavor, we actually exclude them from supporting that entrepreneur in the Endeavor capacity. Because then it's not fair anymore.
You have
a vested interest.
Right. So they won't be able to, they can, but then they won't be mentors in that sense.
So the question of why, I think these people want to pay it forward. Mm. What we provide them with is that platform to be able to do it, in a relatively easy manner. We structure the whole thing, we do all the process, we create all the pre-read information. Mm. So it becomes very easy for them to, I think, commit their time.
But also, I think Anand made a good point that it's mainly about the mentorship they get and the links that this, you know, high-performing individual can provide. Not so much about funding, because I spoke to a couple of entrepreneurs and they actually said that it hasn't really helped them in terms of a funding aspect, but more with, like you said, you know, real solid business advice, like Afzal saying, you know, remove this as a line item and put it separately, you know, R&D.
Right.
A lot of other things, but not from that. And some really haven't benefited from a commercial aspect yet or so.
Mm.
But the connection they give you is phenomenal. One guy said that he's because when you get selected, the first thing they do, as Anand says, they give you they select a board for you.
Mm.
You know, the panel members think these four people would be perfect as your board.
Yeah.
Can you reject the board and say, no, I don't like this person or that?
It's a process. We work with the entrepreneurs on that.
Okay.
So we learn a lot about their challenges
exactly.
And all through the selection process. So we say, okay, you have a fundraising challenge, you have an organizational development challenge, and maybe you want to go to Indonesia.
Mm.
So we'll find you an advisory board that will convene every quarter that will be made up of people who will help you with these very specific challenges.
Excellent.
Obviously, the entrepreneur has to, you know, believe that these people can help him or her as well. So it's a process that we go through with them.
That's interesting. You straight away get that lift off, right? But also, you know, they don't compel you. So one other thing I heard is that if you don't take the advice, then you're not going to get anywhere, right?
Mm.
So and maybe that's where the country units play a role. But in the end, if the entrepreneur isn't, you know, acting on it,
at the end of the day, we're not financial investors,
exactly.
Right? You know, we're an organization that's here for entrepreneur support.
And you want to amplify the impact, which
exactly.
is a very important part of Endeavor, which is actually part of the DNA of Endeavor, right?
Yeah, so I mean,
amplification.
The way we are even formed, I think, you know, is very, very much in line with that. So when we start in a country, we look for these very successful entrepreneurs and business leaders, the Afzals, you know, Nazir Aza, Mark Chang, so on and so forth. And over a period, we go and select these entrepreneurs that we think will be the next generation, right? We help them grow, but over a 15-year period, we're hoping that these people then graduate to become mentors, role models, maybe even investors in other entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
In 15 years, they should be replacing the people that we have on the board in year
and
one.
They'll be paying it forward too.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Anand Krishnan from Endeavor, and we'll continue our conversation with Karamjit Singh and Anusha Kandasivam, if we let her talk, from Digital News Asia after this. Stay tuned to Tech Talk BFM 89.9.
Break from monotony. BFM 89.9.
It's Tech Talk. Good afternoon. Frida Liu here. I'm here with Karamjit Singh and Anusha Kandasivam from DigitalNewsAsia.com, and we're talking about the tech ecosystem, not just in Malaysia, but across the region.
Correct.
And we also have Anand Krishna from Endeavor here with us, and he's just going to sit in and put in his 2 cents worth where he thinks.
Hey, it's big 2 cents
it's
worth.
It's big to 5 cents,
five
man.
5 cents worth.
Right. You've got a story on Maxis, Karam.
Yeah, that's not me. Actually, that is from, let me get the name right of the journalist, Sharmila Ganapati.
Yeah,
it's not me.
Correct. Sharmila. And actually, very quietly last week, kind of, you know, Maxis launched their own branded smartphone. If you remember, very early on in the late 90s, the telcos actually also launched their own their own feature phone, because it was thought to be part of your brand extension, and consumers may want a branded phone, and that failed spectacularly globally, not just in Malaysia. So it's kind of surprising that they've relaunched, you know, and now, of course, it's a smartphone. Now it's called the NEXT-M1. So M, I assume, is Maxis. Maxis One. I think it's a mid-tier phone, and it comes with an entry-level postpaid plan. So Sharmila then spoke to a couple of analysts and even a competitor from another telco, saying, hey, you know, what's interesting about this? Are we missing something that Maxis sees opportunity here? So it doesn't cost much. The device bundle is only 78 ringgit a month, right? But you're tied to a 24-month contract, which seems very heavy nowadays. But it's a 24-month contract.
It's a marriage.
Yeah, it's a marriage. Yeah, there you go. Correct. Yeah, not many marriages last that long also, man, from what I hear. from listening to BFM. Okay. Anyway, so we spoke to a few analysts, and you know, one telco analyst from a local investment bank said, maybe, hey, their subscriber numbers have been decreasing, and maybe this is the way of getting customers on board again. Although this analyst thinks that it's more for branding, and he doesn't think it's going to be a big revenue earner. And a competitor agrees. Their margins are not going to be big because the market is so competitive, right with phones, and especially for entry-level devices. And then, you know, good job on Sharmila. She also spoke to an analyst at IDC. And Jensen Ooi, we've got a nice picture of him, smart young man there. Okay. He says that it's going to be a tough market for them because consumers are heading to the replacement stage now. Mm-hmm. And they're seeking devices that not only come with great specs, but a strong brand name. Mm-hmm. So, is Maxis a strong brand device name? They're a strong brand service name, right?
Mm.
And actually, he says that consumers are looking for phones with great specs. He used the word great specs. So strong spec. This is a mid-tier entry-level smartphone. You're not going to have great specs, correct? So I don't know whether that Maxis, has gone in at the wrong level in the market. But I think this IDC analyst thinks maybe yes, because then those who opt for it are going to be just who are trying out or have restricted budgets for their purchases, right? Mm. And he doesn't think Maxis is going to see a significant amount of shipments in the long run. So, so the strategy is maybe in the IoT space where, of course, Maxis is hoping to have an entire ecosystem powered by the Maxis brand. Mm. So maybe having your own device is one part of the ecosystem. So maybe there's an IoT play here. So that is what something that story is about, with them launching their phone, not as a standalone device to just make money from, but as part of the IoT strategy. So there may be a few more chapters to go here, but we just wanted to flesh that out. Yeah, exactly.
They come with their own phone, right? And of course, you were also telling Jeff Sandra that there's a lot of things happening in Indonesia, right?
So, Indonesia got a lot, but I haven't. And actually, amazingly, that we have actually written a story about Endeavor Indonesia. Right, so they obviously have an Indonesian chapter, and I was actually telling Anand, yes, young man, I don't want to get his name wrong, that I felt that the mentors that the Indonesian Endeavor had gathered was actually stronger than the Malaysian group, and of course Anand doesn't agree with that, but that's up to individual, opinion.
So why do you think they're stronger?
No, I just looked at.
I think it's different though, because like in Malaysia, we are targeting mainly SMEs. We are very fixated on that segment, right? In Indonesia, and we can do that because of the state of the ecosystem in Malaysia. I think the stat is like over 90% of registered businesses in Malaysia are SMEs.
Yes.
So we're looking for high growth SMEs in Indonesia. They're looking at earlier stage companies because that is the state of their ecosystem. Yeah, it's a lot more nascent. Yeah. They have a lot
of the country.
Exactly. Yeah. They have a lot of very large conglomerates and then they have a lot of early stage people, but not necessarily enough people in the middle, I suppose.
Mm.
So they find mentors that would probably be a better fit for early stage folks. And maybe that's why they have more profile and all that, right?
Mm-hmm. And also, I know a lot of the Malaysian mentors, right? So maybe familiarity breeds
contempt.
No, familiarity breeds.
Yeah, but that's the
breeds
expression.
Neutrality, Oh, really? That's a terrible expression.
Exactly.
I don't like that at all. Familiarity breeds neutrality. How about that? Because it rhymes. But so that's why I just felt, they had a stronger pool of entrepreneurs of coaches there. Just my opinion. And then Anand not disagrees, he just shared that it's a different
focus.
His perspective. Yeah,
it's a different focus.
Yeah.
And so that is it. But just quickly, before we forget, I asked Anand a very interesting question, if we can just segue a little bit. With him being exposed to all these amazing entrepreneurs and very successful executives who may be high-level paid professionals or entrepreneurs, why has the entrepreneur bug not bit him himself,
Who's going
in the proverbial rear end?
No, I think, having been so exposed in a secondary form to entrepreneurship like this over the past 3 years, it makes you aware that you really only start a business if you are solving a real problem, right?
Yeah.
Unless there's something keeping you awake at night, or it's keeping you awake that someone else is going to do this instead of you.
Oh, right? Do it better, right? It's not being done
because
well.
Because it's also like my work, right? Because I almost exposed a lot of entrepreneurs and then you hear the headaches, like, do I want to go through that?
Exactly, yeah. Unless I have that itch and that urge, I don't think it's something that I want to pursue at this stage. So, in exchange, I suppose I'm very happy and content being, able to support entrepreneurs in a secondary manner like this.
Mm. And by the way, some interesting snippet about Anand and Endeavor Malaysia. He's the youngest country head in the entire Endeavor. Am I pronouncing it right? Endeavor or Undeavor?
Endeavor.
Endeavor. Okay, I think I got it right.
Word.
Undeavor. Yeah, okay. No. If you're not invited
spell
back,
the
they'll
American
call you
way.
Undeavor. Yeah.
Spell the American way.
There you go.
Without the O-U-R. Without the O.
But he's the youngest country head.
How old are you?
I am 31.
31. It's Frida. No problem. I mean, we men are comfortable in our skin, right?
Okay, Digirati.
Digirati. Robin Leela, Hello Gold. Because now that the Jin is not here, I kind of just spontaneously said we must talk about Robin Lee. And, you know, I was telling Anand, if you want to solve a problem, you want to have, obviously, a deep domain knowledge also. And you know, in the fintech ecosystem, I have not come across many people with the domain knowledge that Robin Lee has. He was the former, he's the founder of Hello Gold now, but he's also the former CFO of the World Gold Council. Can you imagine? I know a Malaysian helming that organization. And before that, in the mid-90s, late-90s, he was a consultant at Boston Consulting Group. Mm. And actually, Tenyu did a very good job of the story about how you can use gold as a, as an investment platform. And he doesn't want to target the people who are already investing in gold. He wants to target the people who have always thought they couldn't afford to invest in gold. And he allows you to, you know, you can start on their platform. If you download the app, you can start buying gold and saving for gold from as little as 1 ringgit. Yes, you heard that right. Although an article says you read that right. But anyway, 1 ringgit, you can start investing in gold. And it was launched in 2015, right? And then it's doing, you know, the numbers are not that great. He said that because they've been building it slowly and they're trying to form a partnership. I think they've got about 2,000 over downloads now of the app. But I think this is something very interesting you want to go and try out. And he's targeting actually to hit 10 million customers in the net by 2020. Mm. Huge. You've got like a couple of thousand downloads right now. He's obviously smelling too much gold if he thinks he can hit 10 million. But hey,
but
he's got a strategy, Robin. He's got a strategy, right?
He's talking about the world, right?
This type of course, in the world, Because it's open for everyone, right?
Yeah.
But just that the gold is kept in the vault. You know, and it's there's an auditor who comes and makes sure actually that the gold is physically there because people are worried about scams, right? You've got gold scams. Mm-hmm. So he's done his part to make sure that the customer is never worried about it, this being a scam. And it's great that he's comfortable using the word, you know, scam to customers. Need not have to worry. We've thought of it. And his target, coming back to his target of 10 million customers, he's going to obviously leapfrog and leverage on organizations which already have a strong customer base. So there are a lot of companies out there, right? Even let's say a telco, right? Maxis has got 13 million customers. He's actually now on the verge of signing up a partnership. Of course, entrepreneurs are always on the verge of signing up a big a partnership, right, Anand?
Always.
But hopefully this really happens, and I hope it happens for him. If that happens, then this organization will come in and push Hello Gold app, you know, to all their database to say that, hey, this is something you're going to consider to start investing in. So you can buy our products more later on or whatever. But it's a great strategy. And if we, and one strong partnership like that helps open the eyes of others to say, this is a value-add product we can offer to our millions of customers. Mm-hmm. And I think that's how he's going to try to hit 10 million. I've met him only once, but I had good vibes about him. He's humble and he's very hardworking, which you need to be. All entrepreneurs are hardworking.
Okay.
But, and he hasn't raised any money yet. And interesting enough, because I think they haven't been able to agree on valuation, so it's been self-funded with some angel investors in there. So looking forward to see if he's able to raise a nice angel round. Not angel round, but a nice maybe seed level or even pre-A, and they were all this pre and now, right? Post-A, intermediate A. Hopefully he just raises a few $1 million and helps him grow. Because I really see value in this service allowing, you know, people from the lower income level to start saving money. Mm. You know, because obviously when you're earning above, earning at a certain level, your EPF isn't going to help you at all.
Yeah, no, because one of the things one of the impression I get with gold is that, you know, it's not so much an investment, but that it's always in line with whatever the inflation rate is, so that you never lose your value if you just keep cash in that sense. Okay, very quickly, Digirati 50 in the reading list.
Digirati 50, oh yeah,
okay,
man.
Very quickly.
Okay, please read this Robin Lee's article. I tell you, did an excellent job of distilling it all. So Digirati 50, just over the past Saturday, we actually featured two of your favorite ladies, Tan Shan Lee and Lavini Tiruchelvam, who are now busy in their
equity
crowdfunding, right, and raising some money. I think they must be close to the $500,000 mark. Mm. They're targeting $1 million. I was wrong the last time I came on. I said they're targeting $500,000. My deepest apologies to the 76 people who listen to the show. They're actually trying to raise 1 million ringgit, and I hope they've crossed the $500,000 mark. And then for this Saturday, watch out for a young entrepreneur, Tengku Shamil from Sekolah Fund. fun. Mm. And he's trying to help kids, right?
So he's also raising funds, right?
I don't know. This is the we wrote this story in January of last year together with Digirati 50. I don't have an update on him yet, but maybe he is.
I think he's going through another through Eta Plus, also raising funds as well.
Mm. Okay, great. I didn't know that. Thanks for that. So gotta talk to you more often.
Do more research.
Okay. Hey, relax,
Okay. Reading list.
Yeah, reading list. Actually, the Indonesian articles from this week are really interesting. Read Robin's article, right?
The Endeavor article.
Poking Karam.
No, you're distracting me. I thought he said he wanted to download the app, Yellow Gold. Hello Gold, not Yellow Gold. Hello Gold. Anyway, with that, I think I've broken a new record, man. Very minimal speaking this week. I'm proud of myself.
Minimal.
Yeah. Okay, we've got Karamjit Singh and Anusha Kandasivam and the mysterious Chong Jin Seong.
Who's supposed to talk about Barcelona. Lots of interesting things there.
Of course, they're from digitalnewsasia.com. And we had Anand Krishnan from Endeavor here with us as well.
Anand, not Ananda.
I didn't say Ananda, I said Anand Krishnan. You've been listening to Tech Talk BFM 89.9.